This is the UFO News and Media Update for March 11, 1995. Here's a question. Will alien abductions be barred from the Harvard Yard? It appears that Dr. John Mack's position at Harvard's Cambridge Hospital just may be in trouble. Mack, known for his recent in-depth forays into abduction research, reportedly has drawn some negative attention from his colleagues. A committee has been formed to investigate Mack, while the UFO community has begun to circle the wagons on his behalf. At last report, Dr. Mack hired an attorney to stand up to whatever moves may be taken against him. UFO will be trying to follow up on this matter. Soon, TV sets will light up with more alien stuff. Disney CEO Michael Eisner introduces the Alien Encounter special, now in syndication across the U.S. Eisner begins the special with claims that the government is hiding an E.T. spacecraft. So begins a believer's gallery of UFO conspiracies packed into an hour-long show. Included are tales from abductees and assorted clues as to why all the UFO facts are being kept under wraps. And now on the UFO landing pad. Australian physicist Paul Davies just received the $1 million Templeton Prize for Progress in Religion. The author of God and the New Physics, Davies has performed that rare feat of intellectually merging science with spirituality. And by so doing, he brings religion up to date and makes conversations about universal truths respectable. As for his $1 million award, Davies plans to use the money to support his research into the nature of time, of consciousness, and into extraterrestrial life. A forward-thinking scientist who embraces the transcendent. Surely a most welcome sight on the UFO landing pad. UFO News and Media Update is brought to you by the best UFO publication in the known universe, UFO Magazine. I'm Vicki Ecker. Now back to Don, Dwight, and their guest Chuck DeCaro on UFOs Tonight.
Before we go back to Chuck, let me make a couple of announcements. It's a little after the hour here, 10 p.m. Pacific and 1 a.m. Eastern Time. Now, for all you folks in Southern California that have been wondering, that have been getting periodic interruptions from Salmon's Cable in the Glendale Burbank area, from what we understand, and I spoke to some of the execs at CRN, Salmon's is going to be putting a separate channel on to carry the cable radio network and yours truly, UFOs Tonight. So there will be no more interrupted service. So if you are with Salmon's and you folks are getting the program now, or if you know somebody that has previously been listening to the program on Salmon's and they don't know what the heck happened, let them know that within the next week or so, they should be up and running full-time. Also, United Artists, which was carrying the cable radio network, is also within the next couple of weeks, according to the execs here at CRN, will have CRN and UFOs Tonight back on full-time. Now, also, I promised you folks that I would give you my internet address. If you've been wanting to contact me, or if you've been wanting to contact UFO Magazine, if you wanted to send us some ideas for some future shows or a special guest you would like to hear, or you would just like to send along some information or say hello, this is what you do. If you're on America Online, you can contact me directly by sending it to my address, and that is D-O-N-F-E-I-I. Once again, that's D-O-N-F-E-I-I. If you are sending via the internet, send it to donfeii@aol.com. That's donfeii@aol. Alpha, Oscar, Lima, Dot, Charlie, Oscar, Mike. And for all you hammers out there, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. We're going to get back to Chuck now. So if you guys that have been waiting to make your phone calls, you've got the high sign, go ahead, fill up those lines, get them in now, and we'll take your calls in the order that they come. Chuck, we are back. How you hanging in there?
Okay.
Okay, well, I just stuck my head outside here while Vicki was doing her media update, and by golly, we have another frog strangler coming down.
Oh, no.
It is pouring. We had a road right below our house wash out last night. They had backhoes and graders up there taking the mud off the highway. So it's been a wet one here the last couple of days.
Chuck, I have a question. In the media, this has to do with, for many years now, I've heard about the videos from Mexico that have hit the airwaves. And just recently, I've seen these videos on sightings. In fact, it was just last week.
Yeah.
Have you seen these videos?
New Mexico.
No, Mexico City.
Mexico City. I haven't seen them.
Tens of thousands of witnesses. And these are not, if the videos are real, I mean, they're quite extraordinary.
And there haven't only been one or two people taking them, so there have been dozens.
Taking pictures of the same object, and of course, this looks like, this is clear video, you know. I mean, this is clear stuff. I haven't seen any of it on any news program, I mean, at all.
So it was on sightings?
It was on sightings, and as I say, I saw it for the first time last week on their Saturday night program at midnight.
I think Steve Cook is out on vacation. I'll call him next week and ask him to send me the video, so in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, the question is, you know, for years and years and years, all the film and photos of UFOs were fuzzy. Now that we're in the age of digital manipulation in which practically nothing can be verified, it's starting to get clear.
Yeah.
And so, naturally, I'm suspect. But I don't hear, I would like, you know,
I hope
I'd like...
you're not suspect. I think you're suspicious.
I'm suspicious. Well, yeah, okay. Yes, I'm suspicious. I'm not suspect.
He also has looked like a suspect.
And I haven't taken an English course in a long, long time. but it was quite extraordinary. I mean, I have to say, I was mind-boggled by the movement of some of this. Is close-up stuff going behind buildings and then moving out with definition, these crafts. And you can see that there are things spinning on them. And it would seem to me that an expert could dismiss this stuff quite easily, or it's real. And considering the length of time, I think it's been over a year that these videos have been taken in the city itself, over this metropolitan area, that somewhere along the line it would become a joke for journalists so that they could put an end to this, or actually take it seriously. And I'm a little mystified because it's I've yet to see anybody debunk it.
Well, I tech advise for sightings, and I they haven't even talked to me about it. Usually, when they get something real hard, they'll give me a call and I'll get a tape the next day. So I really can't comment about, you know, how the clarity of these things until I get my hands on one and talk about it. You know, if you want to go back to the item on site 30 at S30 at Nellis, you know, there's something there. And again, whether that was a weapons project that's terrestrial or whether it was really something novelistic, then now, either way, it's a big story. I want to read you something from AvWeek here.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
We'll take some calls. And incidentally, for all you people out there, I still have a couple of lines open. And I'd especially like to hear from all you satellite listeners, you folks that are tuning in via satellite. So don't be shy. Give us a call.
I want to read you this bit from Aviation Week on the 6th of February, 1995. And they say, a Pentagon Advanced Concept Technology Demonstrator, ACTD, project is flying a manned aircraft to the classified Groom Lake, Nevada facility, a project until recently named Ivy, that's I-V-Y, involves aircraft coating that changes hues and brightness when subjected to an electrical charge, which is the same technology that I was talking about when I addressed the spy conference in San Diego in 93. Now, if that vehicle is flying and it can change color, brightness, and hue, then you also have something that can appear to change shape. One of the things I want to do about the Site 30 thing is to find out if indeed it was infrared, and then try to get the whole tape and then go through it frame by frame and enhance everything. Because some of the interesting things that I saw included, you know, what I early on looked like rotors of some sort, and then later saw four distinctly white pools within this object that, again, if it were infrared, might indicate a heat source of some type.
Well, speaking of heat sources, let me mention this very quickly to you, Chuck. I did a story in UFO Magazine, and we've done a number of programs right here on this show on the DSP-1 satellite array that we presently have looking for ICBM launchers. The same satellite array that we've been, the same type that we've been using since the early 70s, looking for a Soviet first strike, and the same satellites that picked up every Scud launch during Desert Storm that Saddam Hussein's forces launched. Now, these satellites have been routinely picking up anomalies every month, entering and leaving the Earth's atmosphere. We have had people in the aero defense community that have worked on these satellites on this program talking about what they can talk about, not the classified stuff. But it's known that these things have picked up a number of things, including the Tehran-Iran jet interceptor chase that took place in July of 76. Have you ever come across any of this information or material from anybody that you've talked to in the armed forces? And is it common knowledge that these things have been picking up anomalies?
Yeah, but there's a lot of yeah buts in here, too. There are some phenomena that some people call super bolts. You know, these things have been known to pick up lightning storms. When you think about the amount of energy that comes out of a lightning bolt, and if it happens to be traveling horizontally at the top of a storm, for instance, you're liable to set one of these things off. You know, there are a lot of terrestrial explanations for these, because basically they're dumb. They're looking for, you know, infrared activity in a given wavelength over a given amount of time, and they can be fooled. Have I heard specifically that there are UFO-like vehicles? I mean, the answer is no, I haven't heard that. There were some reports many years ago on the earlier satellite called Vela that picked up something over in the South Atlantic that people thought was thought to be the South Africans testing a nuclear weapon.
I remember that case.
So, I mean, there are lots of things that this thing sees that you can't, that can be, you know, attributed to a lot of other sources. And really, as a good journalist, is you know, you need to spend the time and the money.
Well, the way it was described to me, and oops, no, I'll tell you what, I'm going to have to come back to that thought in just a moment, because we've got to take another quick commercial break.
Okay.
So when we come back, we're going to finish up on this, and then, Chuck, we have the lines lit up all the way across the board, folks that want to talk, so we'll be back in just a moment. Okay. We are back now. Let me give you a little addendum on that UFO Central home video. If you call them up and say, please send me your catalog, they will send you a free catalog. Call them up at 800. Back to my guest, Chuck DeCaro. Chuck, we are back. We're ready to start taking some phone calls. But what I wanted to mention is the way that the gentleman that worked in the aero defense industry mentioned the satellite DSP-1 worked. When this thing would pick up something, it would identify it because it had some type of a heat or an energy source. When it was beamed down to the folks at NORAD, they, of course, have supercomputers down there until they're coming out their ears. The technicians would hit the screen with a light pen. The supercomputer would automatically pick up and identify whatever it was the DSP was looking at, and there was a computer identification for unknown anomalies for UFOs. Are you there?
Yeah, but when you say, but of course there'd be a something like that. UFOs.
No, but I mean a certain
unidentified
type.
Flying objects, something they couldn't figure out. They'd all dump into that file, you know, for review later. It doesn't mean that when the Air Force says UFOs.
No, I didn't say spaceship. Okay,
yeah,
I didn't say alien spaceship.
I think one of the things that Don has not been clear about here is that the sensor, there was a sensor that was targeting the Earth, but there was also a sensor targeting out in space.
The stars.
The stars.
Keep it in position, geosynchronous orbit.
Fast walkers were not. They weren't looking terrestrially. These fast walkers were coming
in from behind the
satellite, right? Which I think would discount the lightning bolts.
Yeah, but you know, star trackers aren't the kind of sensors that would give you any resolution as to what it was that they thought that they were seeing.
No, and what this did, it locked on this in this one case, which happened in May of 84. The star sensor locked on this anomaly coming in from behind it. It was a 9-minute duration sighting. It traveled in front of the satellite, went down toward the Earth, came back up and out, and it was a nine minute track. So that's pretty odd.
I gotta see it. I mean, there are other.
Well, I've got the paperwork on it.
You could, if the sun is shining behind you. You know, if you're on that side of the Earth that's illuminated, and let's say a meteor that's relatively flat came in and at the appropriate angle, it would skip off the Earth's atmosphere, and that might explain that. I don't know.
Yeah, but it would be unusual that it would pick up a meteorite, because until it hit the atmosphere, it would not be giving off any energy.
Concur, but it might be reflecting sunlight.
Well, it's a tough one.
I'm saying is that, you know, believe me, I'm not trying to be an apologist here for the debunker community. I'm trying to be a good journalist, you know, and before I put my name on a byline, you can bet you that I'm going to check out everything before, you know, somebody comes out and says, oh, no, you forgot this or that.
Right.
No, the point is that, no, it's good to hear this. It's very good. The real point is that nobody investigates this stuff.
That's true.
This is it. These fellows come forward with this information, and it just hangs there. And I'll give you a... We had a skeptic here about a month or so ago, 2 months ago, Michael Shermer. And off the air we were talking, he's at a university, and he's a professor. Why isn't this subject investigated? Well, basically the answer is there's no money in it.
True.
And if you do investigate it, you're ridiculed.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no benefit to look into this subject unless you're going to debunk it.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the finances are. So you have people in the aerospace industry who are highly intelligent, people who are involved in designing these craft. They come forward, they give you this information, and it sits there a year, 2 years, and nobody investigates it. You hear about it, but it just sits there. And I think there's a reason why it just sits there, because I don't think there are good explanations. I'd like to hear yours, and I think your explanations are damn good ones.
Well, thanks, but you know, I'm just dreaming up off the top of my head.
No, but
the idea is, if you want to remain credible, you can only make one mistake at this. You know, as a journalist, you go and bite
right.
at something.
You're, oh, you're
and
absolutely
just
right.
Go, yeah, it's UFO, it's ET himself.
That's right.
And you're wrong, then
you're a
piss off your career.
That's right.
If you go out and say, I looked at this, I looked at this, I looked at this, I looked at this, and there may also be this, 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 and this, and then after that, then you've done, you know, the best job you possibly can.
Well, let's take some calls, Chuck, and see what the audience has to say. We're going to go to Anaheim. We have Troy, who's calling in on Paragon. Good evening, Troy.
How you doing, Don?
Fine. What's on your mind?
Well, real quick, I wanted to make a statement about that last thing about credibility.
Yes.
Look at the Geraldo Rivera after the Al Capone's vault situation. He's still on the air, so.
But as a journalist.
Yeah, not as a journalist. It's true.
You don't see him on 2020 anymore, folks.
He's tabloid.
That's right. Well, anyway, a couple quick points I wanted to make, and then I want to ask a question. You were mentioning the Roswell case. Major Jesse Marcel stated that along with the other witnesses that were there, he said there were some hieroglyphic-type writings that were on the debris. And also, that the balloon story was just a cover story after the fact.
Well, that came from Brigadier General DuBose, who went on the record before he died, yes. That was not Major Marcel, but that was General DuBose that said that. You're right.
But Marcel said it, too. Marcel also said it was a cover. And DuBose corroborated that story, right.
Yeah. Okay, and then General Ramey died somewhere in the middle, so he could never get any General Ramey.
Right.
And my question was, doesn't it stand to reason that the UFO occupants, with all their advanced technology...
Alleging that there is such... Yeah, such a race. Okay.
Okay. With all their advanced technology, wouldn't it stand to reason that they'd know that an electrical storm might possibly cause some type of an electromagnetic malfunction in their craft to cause a crash?
Well, no one said aliens were perfect.
Maybe they make mistakes.
That's right. That's it.
I mean, but wouldn't that stand to reason with all that technology that, I mean, there had to be some kind of a malfunction other than the ordinary... I mean, we got planes that get hit with lightning all the time. They don't go down.
Yeah, it's certainly, providing it was lightning, there are a certain number of assumptions we have to make. Number one, that there was a genuine extraterrestrial spacecraft that crashed. Okay, now that seems to be the most likely answer, but we don't know that for definite sure. We can suspect it, but we don't have that smoking gun, so to speak. But assuming that it was, then we also have to assume that it was lightning that brought it down, and we got to be careful before we make too many assumptions, because you know what they say, Troy, when you assume, right?
Yes, we do.
Okay. All right, we're going to move along. Troy, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
We're going to go to Houston, Texas. We're going to go to Chuck.
Yes.
Joining us on satellite. Good evening, Chuck.
Hello, Don.
Chuck, who is our radio announcer in Houston, and I might add,
a ham operator.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, Don, I have the more advanced ham and cheese radio, capable of doing many wonderful things. Anyway, hi, Chuck. Hi, Dwight.
Hi.
Let me just lay out a scenario here that I've been thinking about. What if let's say our government, somebody here, somebody somewhere in some hidden corner of our government got a hold of the technology in the 40s to make UFOs, maybe from the Germans or whatever, to make these advanced craft. What if the Roswell UFO crash, the aliens and all that, is merely another story generated below the level of denial to perhaps throw the Soviets off? The Soviets would think, my goodness, they have a hold of not only the German technology, but they have a hold of alien technology as well. There's no hope for us now. So it might be just a story generated as kind of a propaganda. That's not the right word.
Disinformation.
Disinformation. Yeah. The whole UFO thing was an alien thing. It's just kind of one layer under the denial, another layer of BS to throw somebody off.
Yeah, I don't know. Remember, these are the same old boys who were stealing atomic lens secrets during the war. You know, the explosive lens that helps crush the plutonium sphere. You know, these are no fools, and if they've got they had pretty good intelligence. You do remember our friends, the Walkers, and all the names, and all the folks before them, including the Rosenberg. They had a pretty good intelligence net here. That's why I said earlier, I'd like to see the story of their take on our intelligence.
Which makes perfect sense.
You know, there's a good story in there, Chuck. It's, you know, but you know, you got to go dig that out. See, what was the quality of their intelligence upon our intelligence?
Yeah.
Well, last week, I don't know whether you heard, Chuck, Paul Stonehill was reading from a Russian document here. Supposedly, in 1956, there was such concern, and this was from his document, recently given to him from, I think it was Yuri Stroganov. There was a high-level meeting between the Brits, the French, the Soviets,
oh, yeah, I remember it.
And the Americans.
Yeah.
But he was talking about this very communication, that this was, that there has been communication between between our governments, and of course it's to be seen whether these documents are legitimate.
I heard unofficially, but from, believe me when I tell you, a very highly placed source in the early space program, that during the Mercury and Gemini period of time, that there was very close contact between Americans and Soviets as far as the space program was concerned. And we are at the bottom.
But if they just devoted enough energy that they put into OJ to Vince Foster, it'd be President Gore today.
Amen. Chuck, I want to thank you for your call.
Thanks, guys. Good luck.
Keep your eyes pointed to the skies. Chuck, my guest, we're going to take another quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment. And we are back. Okay, Chuck, we have a whole string of calls here. Let me go to, we've got John calling in from Lebec. Is that Lebec, California?
Yes, sir, it is.
How and Cablevision. Good evening, John. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I was just curious about the SETI project out in Mojave. Are they going to do any follow-up on it?
The what?
The SETI project out in Mojave.
Well, you know that the Congress cut off the funding for the, it used to be SETI, then it was changed to the HRMS, the High Resolution Microwave Survey. They had allocated HRMS or SETI $100 million to be spread out over a 10-year period, which broke down to $10 million a year. Which really, believe it or not, I mean, it sounds like a lot of money, but it was peanuts. However, they were only in business a year. Congress cut the funding off, and now they're limping along on donations.
Yeah, so that's what I heard about it. Like Intel and Hewlett Packard gave them a bunch of money to bring it back up or something.
Right. I think they've been trying to get by on something like $4 or $5 million a year, if I'm not mistaken, when originally they had been allocated $10 million. So they've been out soliciting donations and what have you from corporations, people that have an interest in astronomy and science have been trying to keep them afloat.
Yeah, I had one other question. Do you know anything about the laser testing they're doing out in off of 138?
No, I don't. Do you, Dwight?
138 where?
Out in, what is it, Lancaster?
Okay. No, we haven't heard anything about that. What have you heard?
Oh, some rumors about Northrop doing some laser testing out there. One of my friends used to work out there for Northrop, and he got fired or something. And me and him got to talking, and he was telling me stuff. Was something about laser testing out in Mojave.
I do know that there is a new landing system that has been developed that's going to be, I think, universally utilized by the Air Force for runways. It was originally developed for aircraft carriers, but I think they're starting to use it now on static runways all across the country, and it's going to become... it works on a series of lasers that actually
eye safe lasers.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
I do know that that's been going on. I know it's been tested out in that area. I mean, I know that they've installed them on the runways out there.
Yeah.
In Palmdale.
Out in Palmdale and stuff too. Yeah, you know they do a lot of real low level flying over here. Cause I'm right over here by Air Force Base right over here.
Edwards?
Yeah.
Edwards Air Force Base.
So they do real low flying up here, you know, right up here. I'm right on the back, you know, right up here on top of the grapevine.
Mm-hmm.
We see, like, a lot of lights and stuff over on the other side of the ridge and stuff, so I was just curious about what's going on over there.
Okay, John. Well, I'll tell you, keep your ears open. If you come across anything, we'd be very interested in hearing from you.
Absolutely.
Right, thank you. Okay, thank you.
You take it easy.
Keep your eyes in the skies, John. We are going to go to Big Sky Country. We're going to go to Perry, who's calling in from Missoula, Montana on satellite. Good evening, Perry.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Just fine. How are you?
I just wanted to expand a little bit on the Mexico sightings.
Go ahead.
From what I've heard, that it started back when they had the full eclipse. That's when so many people are all outside looking up, and all of a sudden they see all these ships.
July 11th, 1991.
Yeah, objects up in the air. And they, since then, they've been having them off and on, all the, you know, up to now, I guess. And also the fact that they, I guess their version of 60 Minutes, he's a well-known reporter or
journalist
down there. And he ran at least a couple stories on it, I believe. And the fact that, you know, like our media doesn't pick it up shows that the sort of the inflated ego of the American news media, that they won't even, you know, look at other countries' medias and pick up stories from them. They think, well, Mexico, you know, that's just those guys down there. They don't know nothing. Or, you know, even European media, you hear nothing coming from, you know, starting then picking up from their storylines over there or whatever.
Well, I would tell you that I was so impressed by the video. I mean, my mind started wandering, and I just to pick up on what you've just said, I wondered whether or not we weren't testing craft down there, and that's why we're not here. That our own military is testing craft over populated areas to see what kind of reaction
it's
getting.
Which was the same thing that was raised, the same question that was raised during the Belgium sighting several years ago. Above Antwerp and above many of those Belgian cities and towns, because the one thing that the Belgian government did was go to the U.S. government and say, are you flying aircraft over here? And our people denied it, and the Russians denied that it was there. So, you know, then what are you left with? And unless you take a look at the denials and you say, well, you know, they're probably lying because they have some new type of technology that they want to fly over here.
If that's a fact, if it is one of ours, then that's pretty scary that we'd be so arrogant to, you know, put other people's lives at stake just to test out our aircraft.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah, that's true.
Perry, you're tuning in on satellite. How long have you been listening to the program?
Oh, off and on for a couple of years now.
Oh, great.
Well, that's great. Thanks for listening.
Okay. Right.
Thanks for calling.
You're up in Big Sky country, so are you keeping your eyes to the skies?
Always.
Okay.
Great, thank
Take
you.
Take care, Perry.
Thanks
Good
for
night.
Calling. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's see. We got a couple of lines open, so I know that we've had a lot of people that were trying to get in, so now's your chance. And we are going to go to Peter, who's calling from Redlands on TCI. Peter, good evening.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
I'd like to ask, this is my first time calling, I'd like to ask if there are any major theories on the propulsion system of UFOs, and if any technology has been recovered, if like that might be being incorporated into any new aircraft.
Okay, well, let's go to our guest first, Chuck DeCaro. Chuck, have you heard any rumors about this? Chuck?
Well, if you remember in Donald Kehoe's books, early on, Flying Saucers Are Real, he had some very interesting, you know, early 1950s kinds of theoretical approaches to how these things would be powered. And they talked about type of magnetic propulsion, anti-gravity propulsion. Magnetic ones seemed interesting because there seems to be a connection between UFOs and the environment that is readily discerned by electromagnetic phenomena. Properties change. I mean, the lights go out, cars stop, that sort of thing.
A lot of magnetic anomalies around UFO, supposed sighting areas.
So the propensity of thought is that somewhere along those lines, but there are, you know, energy exchanges between, there are theories, for instance, the unified field theory, which really hasn't quite come together yet. The boys at CERN are working on it, but if it might be possible to change electromagnetic energy into gravitational force, you might have a very interesting propulsion system there.
And yeah. Chuck, you've heard of the rumors that have been circulating about Area 51 and S4 and the stories of an alleged physicist by the name of Robert Lazar?
Again, as a defense reporter, you know.
No, I'm asking
All I can give you is analogies for things that are going on. There are a lot of earthly explanations. For instance, if you look at the book Enola Gay or the Tibbetts story, the security they had around the 509th Bomb Group when it was in Wendover included things like dummies of V-1 missiles that were purposely left in hangars for people to see. And then everyone went on leave, and then Army Counterintelligence Corps folks would follow them around and see who talked. And there were people who were talking about, gee, we're working on some secret project with captured German missiles, and boom, they got sent off to Alaska in order to ensure the credibility of the project. You can go read about those things yourself. So if you were working on some technology, how hard would it be to build up a mock-up of a UFO so everybody was glued onto that while you're building a stealth fighter elsewhere? You know, that's not uncommon when you're trying to keep some secret. I would also point everyone out to a wonderful set of books written by Anthony K. Brown about 20 years ago called Bodyguard of Lies. It talked about the deception process around the Overlord operation during World War II. And that two-volume set could be a primer for how to keep a secret. And you might want to look at those before you jump to conclusions about, you know.
No, we weren't jumping to conclusions.
No, what I'm saying, before you go to that, I'm saying there are lots of other things, again, that you need to eliminate as possibilities before you jump to novelistic solutions.
But let me ask you this, Chuck. Now, whenever I ask this question, people always go, I don't know what you're talking about. But let me ask you, and this is what I find curious. You know, you were talking before about, a UAV that had a...
Ivy.
That could change color, luminosity, right? Well, back in the 50s, when people would see these things, and people who would generally be called, you know, nuts, they would describe these craft that moved erratically, that changed color and shape, usually orange to blue to white and back, size and shape, apparent size and shape, moving erratically. This was back in the 50s.
Yeah.
Now, we're getting videos of those craft, and people like yourself are saying, we know that we're developing these sorts of craft that move this way.
Yeah,
don't you find it curious that what was seen in the 50s and people were called nuts is now actually in development?
No. I see a lot of other things. You know, the colored aircraft thing, I mean, goes back to in the First World War, the Germans were building aircraft with cellophane sides as a way to stealth their aircraft at the time. Fortunately, cellophane glistened too much, and you could see the sun reflection off of it. But then during the early stages of World War II, there was a thing called Project Yehudi. And what they were trying to do was change the contrast of edges of aircraft. They put these searchlights or spotlights along the edges of an aircraft, semi-recessed. And they would light up the edges and cut down the contrast, and it was difficult to see. Unfortunately, as radar came along, they said, well, why do we need this? We're going to be spotted by radar anyway. And then radar evolved, and then electronic countermeasures evolved. We ended up in Vietnam, and we found that enemy weapons started being guided electro-optically. So we started looking for, and we saw that smaller aircraft like A-4s got shot down less than bigger aircraft, because they were harder to see. So we started working on a project called Compass Ghost, which was electro-optical camouflage, and back to Project Yehudi. Can we make this aircraft disappear? Or rather, if we can't make it disappear, can we make it appear less?
Well, Chuck, we're not going to make you disappear, but we're going to make you stealthy for a minute, because we got to take another break. Peter, thank you for your call. Keep your eyes to the skies, my friend, and welcome for the first time on UFOs Tonight. We will be back in just a moment. We are back. And before we go back to the phone calls and my special guest tonight, Mr. Chuck DeCaro, do you think there may be something to unidentified flying objects? And do you think there may be something about Roswell? Well, the end of this month, March the 29th, if you are back on the East Coast, in and around the Maryland, Virginia, Washington, D.C. areas, there is going to be a demonstration and a march at the General Accounting Office in Washington, D.C. Operation Right to Know is holding the demonstration and rally at 12 o'clock noon Wednesday, March the 29th at 1995 at the General Accounting Office. That is located at 441 G Street at 4th Northwest in Washington, D.C. Now, it's sponsored by Operation Right to Know. You can contact them on the internet by addressing them at OR, calling the area code 202, and we're going to go back.
Soon we're going to have the all-email address network.
I knew you were going to say something. I knew. Hey, Dwight, D-O-N-F-E-I-R at sign AOL dot C-O-M. Chuck, we are back.
I think a good email address for Dwight.
Are you going to be down there covering the GAO demonstration?
I don't think so.
Why not? This would be right up your alley. You're a news guy.
I'm a news guy, but I do things kind of, you know, quietly and directly.
Well, you could fly over them.
I could fly over. No, I don't think so. They have a lot of airspace. They have problems with people doing pylon turns around the Washington Monument.
Let's go to Sorrento, Florida, and then we're going to go to Chicago. How's that sound?
Good.
And then we'll go to Oregon. Okay. Then we'll go back to Illinois.
Well, you better do it because it's getting late.
I'm going to do it. We're going to go to Carl, who's calling in from Sorrento, Florida. Good evening, Carl. Carl is joining us via satellite.
This may be my last call. I got enough black choppers flying around me now.
Oh, no.
I'd like to talk to Chuck.
Sure.
Sure.
Chuck, are you under contract with Sightings?
We're working on a first story basis.
Okay, well, I think they've been holding out on you. They have 150 tapes. They've been sucking up all the tapes from Mexico. And if you have a plane with cameras, I suggest that you go down and get a hold of a man named Jaime. He spells it with a J. He does 60-minute program, I don't know on what station, in Mexico City.
Well, Carl, don't be too surprised if he's not on this program in the real near future.
Oh, well, he's got the dope, and Chuck, you better check with him, see what he's got, and then make your own pictures.
Sounds good to me.
His own people went out to investigate it, and they came back with their own pictures.
What was the resolution of the pictures?
Fair to middling. But just about everybody with two eyes in Mexico City has seen one.
Yeah, that's what we've heard, Carl. We certainly have heard that.
I would pack my plane up and get down there.
You know, earlier you guys were talking about the Russians had a meeting with the French, the British, and the Americans in 1956. Well, what do you think was going on in 1956?
Oh, you mean other than the Hungarian Revolution?
Yeah.
There was a little soiree going on in the Middle East around the Suez Canal between the Israelis and the rest of the Arab world.
And how do you think we're getting our intelligence?
Back then?
Yep.
Ian Fleming, I believe.
U2.
U2 is right.
You mean it wasn't Ian Fleming?
So U2 started in Groom Lake in 1955. The project started about 1953. And the whole story of how Groom Lake got to be Groom Lake is pretty hilarious. At least the way I read it, the reason why Groom Lake was so secret was because the CIA wanted to hide it from the Air Force. Oh, no, we're talking rice bowls here, folks. Money. Strategic reconnaissance. But I just find it ironic that the Russians would call up the British and the French, who probably were clueless as to what the United States had. We were flying operationally over friendly territory as well as Russian territory.
Oh, sure.
To include the Middle East.
Yeah.
With U-2s with 60-inch cameras way back then. So, you know, I could see the amused expression on John Foster Dulles after having breakfast with his brother Alan, and they just kind of tittered a little bit and said, oh, okay, I'm going to be straight face with the boys now and go off and do that. I mean, because the Russians were tracking things at extreme altitudes, and they had no clue as to what it was initially.
Yeah.
Hey, Chuck. Chuck?
Yep.
I'll go with you to Mexico. By the way, I saw your Brentwater stuff on CNN. I didn't have a recorder at the time. You don't suppose they'd reshow it, do you?
No, it's been 10 years now, and they got a whole new special assignments unit over at CNN, and so I don't even know if they get copies of it.
Okay, guys, we're going to have to move along. Carl,
okay.
Thank you for your
time,
my friend. Keep those eyes pointed to the sky. We're going to go to Leslie in Chicago, who is joining us on satellite. Good evening, Leslie.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm fine. What's
okay.
on your mind?
Well, this is the first time I've called. I picked up a wild feed video from Canada.
Uh-huh.
And that showed quite a lot of these UFOs in Mexico. And they came over pretty clear. I don't know where they got it from.
Well, everybody in Mexico City that has a camcorder, probably.
Professional crews have taken them, and people in the street have taken them. That's what's so bizarre. I mean, it's literally thousands, 10,000 people have seen these things. And the one shot that I saw was of the same vehicle or whatever it was, the same anomaly from three different angles.
What did it look like, Coy?
I'm going to tell you, it looked like a spinning top. It looked like two saucers on top of each other. It wasn't slender. It was, you know, like a squat, like a football. It looked like a football from the side, only there was something moving on it. And this thing was low to the ground and going behind buildings in Mexico City. Then there were shots of what you would call lights in a daylight sky, moving back and forth horizontally. It would go behind a cloud, come back, go behind a cloud, come back out again, then go backwards behind another cloud. It was very bizarre stuff. But it was the spinning top was very clear. I mean, you could see that this was something low to the ground with substance, and it was solid, and it was moving very slow and around these buildings. So that's why I say it's either very, very good trick photography done digitally, clearly, or it's real. I mean, I would like to see somebody analyze the footage. But when you see the same footage from three different people, and they say they've corroborated that these people who took the footage didn't know each other, and then you have professional crew saying that they took it, well, I just think it would be interesting for some reputable journalist to look into it.
We're out of time. Thanks very much.
There's one more. If you enjoyed this edition of Don Echo Live.
Leslie, we're going to have to move along. We're almost out of time.
Thank you for your call.
Thanks
very much.
Okay, tune in next week. We still have a couple of minutes yet. We're going to go, let's see, very quickly to Ron in Medford, Oregon, who's joining us on TCI.
Hello,
Ron, good evening, and unfortunately, you're going to have to hurry it up.
Yeah, I was 60 Minutes last week. Ed Bradley had a story on the couple of Soviet agents, KGB, worked at a Washington embassy, and they were talking that they didn't recruit many Americans to spy on them. Most Americans were too honest and didn't want to do it. Most of their referrals came in by walk-ins, you know, Ames and Walker and stuff like that.
I saw the program, yes.
And then they said, too, that they're reporting back to the higher-ups in the KGB in Moscow was basically by they were reading the New York Times, and the people in Moscow didn't, and that's where their information was from. If you're talking about before about the spying and the state of Russian spying in the world.
That's correct.
And that's all I had.
Okay.
Well, thanks for calling, Ron.
Thanks, Ron. Keep those eyes pointing to the sky, my friend.
We'll see.
Okay. Well, Chuck, we're just about out of time. We only got about another minute or so. Did you have anything that you wanted to say before we closed up?
I tend to agree with you that there needs to be some serious journalistic effort towards digging out some of these stories. And that means, getting folks to kind of write to their favorite news organization, say, look, we don't, believe in little green men or anything else, but we'd like to have a resolution to this particular story. And if you get enough people writing about a particular story, you'll usually get some media outlet to go forward and
try to dig it out. But you also need commitment from a news organization to put the bucks behind it, because these kinds of things take a long time to dig out.
Do you think there's a story there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's lots of good stories. I think that S-30 story that Hardcopy had is very good, you know, and very interesting tape, and that should be dug out.
Okay, Chuck, hold on for just a minute. I'll be with you in just a second.
Sure.
But I want to thank you very much for coming on the program tonight. Would love to do this again before the very too far distant future. Dwight, that's it for another week. You're going to be gone for the next two, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to go to Canada.
Any chance you'll be able to check in with us?
Well, I'd like to call you if I can. If I'm not working Saturday night, I'll give you a call.
Well, like they say in the showbiz world, break a leg up there, my friend.
Thanks very much. I'll miss you all and be thinking about you if I can't call.
Well, I know that, and we're going to miss you. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for another week. Remember, you can contact me on the computer networks by contacting me at donfeii@aol.com or at UFO Magazine, Monday through Friday, your general business hours, 818-951-1250, or right here on UFOs Tonight. That's it. Keep your eyes pointed to the skies. We'll see you in a week. And hey, here's the music.